from the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
For a lot of people in the media, he broke them, you know. He convinced them that they're no longer supposed to be journalists, but they're supposed to be activists, or they're supposed to be opposition to the president. I think you can cover him fairly, and you can ask hard questions. But what we've seen is something that's gone well beyond that.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Scott Jennings, senior political commentator at CNN, and also author of the new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. We'll talk in depth with Scott about that book on today's program. Also later on, Ava Downs is with us, current Hillsdale student and 2025 USA Shooting Trap Junior Olympic champion. First, we're joined by Scott Jennings. He's CNN senior political commentator, also radio host for the Salem Radio Network. You can find him on X at Scott Jennings KY. His brand new book is A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for the time today. Honored to be with you.
I don't know if you get this as much as maybe you did a year ago, but I still hear people say this, which is, where the heck did Scott Jennings come from? All of a sudden, election 2024, everyone's watching viral videos on X and elsewhere, and this guy Scott Jennings is making points we all wish we could make when leftists make their arguments. So tell people a bit about your background. Where did Scott Jennings come from?
Well, a long time ago, he came from Kentucky. I'm a Western Kentuckian, grew up in a little town called Dawson Springs, and also attended the University of Louisville. That's where I graduated from. And, you know, years ago, I thought I was going to be in journalism. I was a radio news anchor in Louisville while I was in college. But in 2000, I decided to join the Bush for President campaign, and that began my journey in politics. But, you know, I never really forgot about my love of the media, my love of broadcasting. And in 2017, I got a chance to join CNN. You know, for a few years, it was really a very much a part-time job for me. But the 2024 campaign, plus the advent of this 10 o'clock debating show, which we now have for the last couple of years, really gave me a chance to do what I can do. And so I really credit CNN, honestly. They decided they wanted to put a conservative on the air who was going to fight hard for how half the country sees the world. And I'm doing that every day and making arguments and debating the left and doing it often 4 and 5 on 1. And honestly, I think it's working.
People like you, I think, because you are measured and leveled and logical, even in the face of perhaps some hyperactive activity from the left on the panel. What is going through your mind as you await your turn, let your colleague finish before you rebut that argument? What are you thinking about?
Well, look, I think the TV debates are for conservatives. I think the way we win is by keeping our wits about us and also arguing in good faith and in good humor. I don't think we win by just simply yelling louder than the other people. I don't really care for crosstalk. I don't like it when the whole thing just gets tied up in a shouting match. I believe in conservative arguments. So I believe in letting these conversations unfold. And when you do that, then you get a chance to talk. And if you give me 60 seconds, there's a really good chance I'm going to explain why the left is wrong, why the conservatives have it right, and why our point of view right now seems to be ascendant in America. But I think a lot of people get into these debates, they get overly emotional, they can't control themselves, and they stop making factual or logical arguments, and they just start operating out of emotion or anecdote. And I just don't personally find that to be persuasive. And I think most people who watch debates and enjoy debates would rather hear someone argue from a position of fact and logic and reason as opposed to just constant emotional overreaction.
Scott Jennings, the new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. And Scott, as I read A Revolution of Common Sense, it occurred to me that this is a book as much about the president's cabinet as it is about the president himself. Scott Bessent, Marco Rubio, Doug Burgum, Christopher Wright, Elon Musk for a time as well in that inner circle. How do you explain that a guy who is painted as a dictator and an autocrat put so much trust in these advisors and cabinet members who are so sharp on the issues?
Well, that's a great question. And the one big observation that I was able to make, I think, after hanging around the White House and spending some time with the president and just talking to all these people, is just what a premium Trump put on picking the right team this time around. I think that's one of the biggest differences between this administration and his first. He's got the correct team that matches his leadership style. So you look at the people that he's chosen, Bessent, Rubio, Burgum, and the others that you mentioned. They best match how he wants to run the country. I think in the first term, he didn't quite have that. Not that those people were bad people. It's just when you have a leader, when you have a manager, the team has to match the style. And this time around, they got that right. I can tell you this. I don't know who was running the country, really, during the Biden years. I'm not sure any of us do. But I know who's running it right now. It's Donald Trump. And the way he's running it is out of the Oval Office, behind the Resolute desk, and surrounded by a cabinet and a team of advisors who are not there to execute their will. They're there to execute the president's will based on the results of the last election. So I really do think he puts a lot of trust in these guys. And he'll tell you, you know, Rubio's been an all-star. Bessent's been an all-star. Mm-hmm. And all these people he has put in place, what are they doing? They're taking his priorities that he clearly laid out to the American people, and they're executing them in their own divisions. And I, you know, my personal view is that Bessent and Rubio have been the all-stars of the cabinet. And you hear that constantly from conservatives that you talk to around and around the country. They're just so impressed with these two guys. And you look at their portfolios, and, you know, a great chunk of the president's first year in office has fallen right in the lap of Rubio and Bessent, and they have executed flawlessly.
On Marco Rubio, the president has had some relationships with, say, older guard Republicans that have fizzled after a time. Rubio's a guy that sort of predates the president in terms of his political stature, but someone who seems to have grown in stature with the president and grown in trust with the president. Why is Rubio so strong inside the administration?
Well, he has been, I think, both a skillful operator inside the building over at the State Department, but also externally. I mean, you look at all the serious issues that have come up on the world stage in the last year. I mean, the president has spent a lot of time on foreign policy. Rubio's been in the middle of all of it. You look at the peace agreements they've negotiated. You look at dealing with the migration crisis going on in our hemisphere. I mean, across the board, usually on a weekly basis, Trump is doing something that involves the portfolio of the State Department. Look what's happening in the Middle East. I mean, Rubio's all over that as well. And so one of the reasons he's been able to grow in stature is just because the president has put so much on his plate, and the president himself has focused so much on these issues. It demanded a Secretary of State who could rise to the occasion. There's no doubt that Rubio has done that. And I think what conservatives love about Rubio is just how articulate he is at explaining, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, here's why it's going to work. He is one of the smoothest communicators in the cabinet. And as you know, with Trump, being able to communicate externally is a big part of what it means to work for him. And I just don't think anybody has communicated the America First worldview better than Marco Rubio. He has shown extreme skill set here, both in terms of internal management, but external communications. He's really the whole package right now and is doing a terrific job, in my opinion.
Scott Jennings with us, CNN senior political commentator. You hear him hosting on Salem Radio Network as well. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. You mentioned this first year or so has been a heavy foreign policy year for President Trump. Inside A Revolution of Common Sense, you make the point that it's actually surprising how not friendly the president has been to Russia since taking office. That, of course, goes against some conventional wisdom that says, oh, Trump's a Russian stooge. How has the president been perhaps an enemy to Russia during his time in the Oval Office?
Well, I think this is one of the most sinister narratives, and it's left over from the beginning of his first administration when every Democrat in the country convinced themselves that Russia had stolen the election, which, of course, we now know is completely, totally false and fabricated. But as a leftover of that era, they are now convinced that every foreign policy move the president makes is done so in service to Vladimir Putin. The record is exactly the opposite. Yes, it is absolutely true that he's trying to achieve a peace deal between Ukraine and Russia. I tell you one thing I learned about Donald Trump. The man is serious about peace. He hates war. He doesn't like war. He doesn't like the idea of people dying all over the world. And he believes if you have a strong American president, you could bring about peace in the world. And he has done that in several conflicts. But on the Russia piece, look what he's done with NATO, getting them to agree to go to 5% for their defense spending levels. That's never been done before. He has provided assistance and weapons to Ukraine. You know, he's had Zelensky in the Oval Office, and although they've had difficult conversations, there's really no question, where the president aligned with our allies in Europe, aligned with NATO, there's no question where he is on this. And he has time and again, I think, grown more and more frustrated with Vladimir Putin, who is rebuffing his efforts to try to get to a peace agreement. I think the president knows what the score here is. He's dealing with a Russian president who only understands toughness. He only understands strength. And I think that's what the president is doing when he's helping our allies understand the wisdom of investing more in their own national defense. He has strengthened NATO far beyond what any president's been able to do when everybody was predicting the opposite, that he was going to destroy NATO. I just think time and again, these attacks have been hurled at Trump on the Russia stuff, and he constantly proves that it's not true, yet this narrative persists. You sort of have this unholy alliance on this between Democrats and the media. They just sort of take it as an article of faith, and they can go out and make these flippant comments. Oh, the president, you know, he likes Vladimir Putin. You have no evidence of that whatsoever, but you do have evidence to the contrary. It's just sad to me that they won't talk about it that way.
That's Scott Jennings of CNN and the Salem Radio Network. We'll talk more with him about his new book in just a moment. But first, I want to invite you to help shape the future of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, which includes this show you're listening to right now. Visit podcast.hillsdale.edu. Click on the survey pop-up, and you can take our very first listener survey. By doing so, you'll help the Hillsdale College Podcast Network reach millions of Americans with the timeless truths that make this country great. But we need your help. Visit podcast.hillsdale.edu. Click on the survey pop-up to take the survey. Thanks for listening, and thanks in advance for your feedback. We continue with Scott Jennings from CNN and the Salem Radio Network. His brand new book is A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott Jennings, you mentioned the media. There's a chapter in which you coined the phrase political information distribution complex in the way that information flows from the legacy media, mainstream media, to the American public. Is that changing a bit? We see some changes at the Washington Post, both on the op-ed page and among the paper's reporters. We see changes at CBS, Barry Weiss and Free Press people coming in to the CBS network. Are executives realizing at last that something needs to change?
Well, I think maybe yes. I think we have a long way to go, though. I think the American media is in such a deep hole with the people. You look at the confidence in institutions measurements taken by Gallup. I mean, people don't have confidence in the institution of the media. People want there to be a trusted free press. I certainly do. I work in it. You know, I believe that we need a trusted free press. We just don't have that right now, but we could get it. And I think things are changing, but I think we have a long way to go. And I think Trump, unfortunately, for a lot of people in the media, he broke them, you know. Mm-hmm. He convinced them that they're no longer supposed to be journalists, but they're supposed to be activists, or they're supposed to be opposition to the president. I think you can cover him fairly and you can ask hard questions. But what we've seen is something that's gone well beyond that. And I think in our political coverage, the reason I point that phrase, political information distribution complex, is because on election night 2024, you know, I made this long speech after we finally declared Trump the winner on CNN about the death of the political information distribution complex, mm-hmm. and about how it had misled the American people about the state of the election, about what was happening in the last 3 weeks of the election, about the issues going on in the election. It had worked so hard to elect Kamala Harris, and it had convinced people that she was surging at the end, when in fact we know the opposite was true. And so I think people have awakened to the idea that they're not always getting all the information from one source, and people right now are seeking out independent sources. They're looking at folks right now who are existing outside of the mainstream media space for information. That is the market screaming at you to make changes. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things you mentioned I think are good. There's a long way to go. I'm a huge Barry Weiss fan. I mean, she may save us all. We'll see. We'll see. But I think that's someone who understands, what are we trying to do here? We're trying to give people the truth. We're trying to tell people the truth. We're trying to get people information, not narratives. And I just think that's what people are hungry for. They don't want narratives. They want to know the facts. They want to know the information. But often what they get are narratives, just like on the Russia conversation. They've been fed a narrative about that, but I'm not sure they've been fed the truth about it. But they get plenty of narratives. But I think there's something amiss here, and they're hungry for truth instead of narrative.
Scott Jennings with us. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. The other big issue in President Trump's first year has been the southern border and immigration. And President Trump, back in that first campaign, of course, made the promise that we'd get tired of winning. And it was kind of a joke, of course. But I wonder, Scott, if the president has been too successful on the southern border, because that was a disaster and he cleaned it up very quickly. All it took was a change in the Oval Office. But now that has disappeared from the news cycle. It is not as big of a deal as it was perhaps 6, 8, 12 months ago. Texas is redistricting, thinking that some of those Hispanic gains along the border will hold. And I just wonder, if has the president been too successful on the southern border?
Well, he has. There's no question. I think this has been the swiftest and most important accomplishment of his administration. I think the immigration issue is what propelled him in the first place when he first ran for office. It certainly propelled a big part of his campaign last year. And you're exactly right. All we needed was a new president. We haven't passed any new laws. That's what's amazing about this. We've not passed a single immigration law. We're just enforcing the laws that exist. And that shows you the difference between this administration, which is simply enforcing the law, and the previous, which was instructing federal law enforcement not to enforce the law. They wanted a culture of open borders. And, of course, you know all the societal ills that flow from that. Trump shows up, changes the attitude. The border is closed. I do think we're having a pretty significant national debate about internal enforcement, but I still think President Trump is right side up on it. I still think the American people believe, you know, we let 20 million people into this country. We can't just turn a blind eye to what that means for our society. It doesn't mean that they're all bad people or that they're all violent criminals, but it does mean they all broke our laws. And it does beg the question, how permissive are we going to be? And the more permissive you are on amnesty for things like that, the more you encourage people to come here. I think Trump knows that. So part of the internal enforcement argument is not just, well, we have to get people out because they broke our laws. It's that we cannot go back to sending a signal to the rest of the world. Just get here and it'll probably work out for you. Mm-hmm. That attitude's what got us in the mess in the first place. And so I totally agree with you that he's been successful. But honestly, I'm not sure the job is done. The internal enforcement piece goes on. Democrats are fighting hard against it. And honestly, if we ever got a new administration or people in charge that had a different attitude, you could see how quickly you could slip back into the old ways. Now I think it's also evolving into this fight with the narco-terrorists. They're sinking the boats out in our hemisphere now. Mm-hmm. They're amassing military power to do that. I think the signal goes beyond just simple immigration enforcement. The message is, we're just not going to allow the United States to be taken advantage of by Central and South America anymore, whether that's via just simple immigration or whether that's via this narco-terrorist system that exists that puts all this poison into our country that kills hundreds of thousands of people a year.
Scott Jennings, there's a section in A Revolution of Common Sense on DEI, and you expound on this thought, this quote from Chris Caldwell, who says that this rolling back of DEI is the biggest policy change in decades. Why is the activity against DEI, the elimination of DEI, both governmental and then the influence on the private sector, perhaps an underreported, underappreciated part of President Trump's second term?
Well, one of the things that he has done is he has, you know, I think we had a wet blanket on us in the country. Everybody was sort of tiptoeing around, being forced to speak this language of DEI, being forced to say things out loud, candidly on other cultural issues, on the transgender ideology. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at how our culture had been overtaken by people who had just invented a new language and invented a bunch of nonsense and forcing everyone in government and in corporate America to live by these edicts. And of course, the Biden administration definitely, as a policy matter, installed this in the federal government. They pushed this. Nobody really liked it. Nobody really thinks it's a good idea to operate by the edicts of DEI or by the edicts of transgender ideology. And so Trump comes along and basically had the courage to say what everyone else is already thinking. He removes it from the federal government. It's no longer federal policy. What they want to do is find people who are best for the job, and that's the trait that they're looking for, who's the best qualified person. By doing that, I think he gave cover and courage to everybody in corporate America to say, well, yeah, we don't have to do this either. Mm-hmm. And I think the vast majority of Americans agree with the president on this. It is a major division between the two parties. The Democrats are captured by this identity politics, ideologies that are all wrapped around identity. And what he wants and what he would say is that that's just not common sense. You know, what's common sense is who's the right person for the job? Who's got the best qualifications? Shouldn't that be what we're looking for first and foremost? That is a common sense way to approach the job that most Americans agree with. And by ripping it out of the federal government, he basically created a permission structure for everybody else in America to do the same thing. And I think there is relief, absolute relief across corporate America that Trump had the courage to finally turn us away from this ideology, which, by the way, it's bad for culture. It's bad for America. It's bad for people. And it's not a good way to run a government, certainly not a good way to run a company or any kind of an organization. Trump knew it. He ran on it. And he followed through on the promise, and I think people are appreciative of it.
Scott Jennings, in A Revolution of Common Sense, you make the point explicitly at least once, and I think it comes through in different ways, that Donald Trump, despite, again, media reports, is a very curious person and wants to know from people around him. You were inside a few of these meetings while researching and writing A Revolution of Common Sense. How does Donald Trump get his information? How does he want it presented to him? What questions does he want answered?
That is a great question, and it is a big observation and takeaway for me having written this book, observing the president in a meeting. I think the caricature of him portrayed by the media is totally inaccurate. He is extremely curious. He asks a lot of questions. He likes to watch debates between advisors, people who have slightly different opinions about things. He does ask for everyone's opinion in the room. I watched him do it in the Oval Office. I watched him do it on Air Force One when I went to Michigan with him on his 100th day in office. He convenes people. He listens. And then he makes decisions. He's decisive. I think a difference between him and Biden was famously indecisive or uninvolved. Trump is involved. He's involved in the details. He's involved in how decisions are made. But once a decision is made, it's made. He's a decisive person. That is a trait that I think makes for a good presidency. So my observations are he absolutely likes to get information from people. He takes in a lot of information. He is as in tune with the daily news and cultural zeitgeist as anyone. And so when you think about, you know, what does the president know? Who is he talking to? He talks to a wide range of people, but they're not all yes men, and they're not all telling him what he wants to hear. There are a lot of people, I think, around him who are constantly debating about what the right thing to do is. But at the end of the day, they all know who the decision maker is. And the president also knows, ultimately, it's my responsibility to make a decision. You can't debate things endlessly. At some point, you have to decide what direction we're going. And I think he's been good at both. Putting together these internal conversations, but then being decisive when the time came to make a decision.
Scott, we talked earlier that this has been a foreign policy focused presidency for much of this first year of the second term. And President Trump has a very different view about United States power than Joe Biden did. What does President Trump understand about U.S. leadership on the world stage and showing and using, when necessary, U.S. power on the world stage?
Great question. Well, first of all, he understands what it means to have a strong American president who's willing to engage and what it means to have a weak and indecisive president. That's what we had before. So he believes that if the American president is strong, he believes that if the American president projects confidence and strength and decisiveness, then, look, we are the world superpower. We are the indispensable country in the world. Our engagement with a president like that can force people to the table, can bring people around and get people to, you know, do things. Look what's happening in the Middle East. I don't think there's anybody except for Donald Trump who could have convened the Arab states, his special relationship with Netanyahu. I mean, the people that he had to get in the room, he gets in the room and he gets them to an outcome. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden couldn't figure that out. He's done that in little areas all over the world. The one area that eludes him is Russia, Ukraine, and he is working earnestly towards it. It's probably the most complicated situation that he is dealing with, but I know he's focused on it and trying to get to an outcome every single day. But in most cases, I think his view is that if the American president projects strength, if we say we're not going to put up with nonsense here, we're not going to put up with bad actors, we're not going to put up with people, you know, agreeing to something and then violating it the next day. He says we're not going to put up with narco terrorists in our own hemisphere. You need to help us with that. Look at what's going on with Mexico. We've had a massive drop in fentanyl coming across the border. Yes, the border is closed because of Trump. Some of that, though, remember at the beginning of the administration, he slapped the tariffs on Mexico and said, this is how serious I am about needing you to work with me on getting fentanyl down. I don't want it coming across the border anymore. That has been a major success. They're not covering it, but it's been a major success. Mm-hmm. None of this happens if these other countries don't take the president seriously. And you have to take Trump seriously. He has shown, if you don't take me seriously, I will take action. And people respect that. And so it goes into this idea of, is the president strong or is he weak? Is the president decisive or is he constantly wringing his hands? Is he constantly indecisive? Right now we have a strong, decisive president, and it's yielding results.
Final question for Scott Jennings. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, is available now. A quote from the book: Trump has expanded the definition of Republicans so it includes people who never have thought of themselves as Republicans until Trump invited them in. First of all, I think a great point that the invitation is such an important part of this process. You have to go ask for the vote. But this has led to a coalition, a wide coalition. It's led to people like RFK and Lori Chavez de Remer in the cabinet and people who perhaps are not historically Republican-type selections. So the big question, how do you hold this coalition together when Trump is not going to appear on the ballot anymore? And how do you convince Republican voters to go out and vote when Donald Trump is not on the ballot?
Well, that's the number one strategic conversation that the Republican Party is wrestling with right now. What does our coalition look like in a post-Trump environment? The thing is, though, presidents, the best presidents, the people who run the best presidential campaigns, they are by nature coalition builders. George W. Bush did this. You know, he brought people in 2000 and 2004. Barack Obama did this. The ones that know how to get votes go out and find ways to get votes. Trump inherently understood this. Mm-hmm. But he now sits at the top of a political party that has everybody from RFK to Mitch McConnell in it. I mean, that's a wide berth. But that's how you win. You don't win by getting smaller. You win by making your party attractive to people who might not have otherwise considered it. The other thing he's done is he's brought people into the party who had no demonstrable history of voting or very little history of voting. They didn't think of themselves as political at all. When I was with him in Michigan on his 100th day in office, I'll paraphrase, but he said, you know, in his speech, you know, whether you're conservative or whether you're liberal, whether you're left or whether you're right, whatever it is, it's just common sense. And his point is, I'm going to try to make common sense decisions. I'm not going to try to say I only am interested in people of a certain ideology. I'm just interested in making the best decision for the American people and what makes the most common sense. That branding has been so attractive to people who never, ever would have imagined they would be voting for a Republican. Mm-hmm. But yet, here they are. Look at the MAHA people, the Make America Healthy Again people. There's a ton of MAHA left out there, people who would think of themselves as being from the left. But Donald Trump made a space for them because he was said, well, some of what you're saying actually is there's common sense in that. I'm willing to adopt that, even though you're not necessarily of my political persuasion all of the time. That's pretty genius. How does the party replicate this in the future? Well, my takeaway is you can't replicate Donald Trump. He is singular. He is unique. The next group, whether it's J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio as a team, which seems like that's the direction we're headed right now, they're not going to be able to replicate his attitude. But what you can replicate is the idea that, hey, we have to be coalition builders. We have to find ways to make the party bigger, not smaller. I think sometimes, honestly, in politics, you're fighting with people who want to get rid of folks. Uh-huh. I want to excommunicate you from this. I want to get rid of you. Trump says, well, wait a minute. I actually want to bring people in. I need to add here to get enough votes to win. He did it twice. I think people would do well to look at his example. He didn't win by getting smaller. He won by making the party bigger. That's really the lesson for the future.
Scott Jennings, you see him on CNN as senior political commentator. You hear him on the Salem Radio Network weekdays. You can find him on X at Scott Jennings KY. The new book is fantastic. It's A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott Jennings, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me. It was an honor to write the book, and I appreciate the attention today. Thank you, sir.
Up next, Ava Downs is with us, current Hillsdale student and 2025 USA Shooting Trap Junior Olympic champion. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Classical music is one of the greatest achievements of Western civilization. It took 2,000 years and the work of the greatest philosophical, scientific, political, and religious minds to properly tune the piano and make great music possible. But classical music can be intimidating. In Hillsdale College's new, free, online course, The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin, you'll learn how to appreciate humanity's greatest musical accomplishments. In the history of classical music, concert pianist and Hillsdale College Distinguished Fellow Hyperion Knight explains how music has developed and what distinguishes the greatest musical achievements of Western civilization. To enroll today and secure your spot in this completely free online course, visit hillsdale.edu/network. That's hillsdale.edu/network.
Great books, great people, great ideas. Learning about these things is critical to being a well-educated human being, and we can help with the Hillsdale Dialogues. Each week, Hillsdale College President Larry Arne joins radio veteran Hugh Hewitt to discuss topics of enduring relevance. And from time to time, they also talk about current events, but always with an eye toward more fundamental truths. And they want you to tune in to a conversation like no other. The Hillsdale Dialogues are posted every Monday on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu. Or listen via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your audio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We invite you to take a moment and subscribe to this show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We're joined by Ava Downs. She's a junior here at Hillsdale College, a member of the Hillsdale College Shotgun Team, and also 2025 Junior Olympic Champion in International Trap. Ava, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
For listeners who might not be familiar, tell us what exactly is trap shooting and how does a typical competition work? How does it play out?
So there's two different kinds of trap. There's American trap and international trap. I specialize in international trap with USA Shooting and the Hillsdale College Shotgun Team, but we all shoot everything. We shoot the American disciplines as a team. And how an international trap match, such as JO Nationals, works is they're typically 125 targets, and we shoot three rounds the first day, two rounds the second day. And what international trap actually is there's a physical bunker 10 meters in front of you in the ground with 15 machines in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's five stations. Each station has three machines allocated to it, a left, a right, and a straightaway. And the thing is, each of them are all very different. So they can be anywhere from 1 to 3 meters high at a certain distance out. So they can be high or low and anywhere from 45 degrees left to 45 degrees right. So they can really go anywhere and you don't know what's coming out, and they go 72 miles an hour. So that's the quick rundown.
We'll talk a bit more about the Junior Olympic Championship in just a bit, but how did you first get into shooting sports? Was it something you grew up around, or did you find it later on?
So I grew up around it. We've always been a very gun-heavy family. We go up north and shoot. And when I was 7 years old, my dad went out with my uncle and shot sporting clays. And I wanted to go along the next few weeks. So I went along and pushed the buttons. And then I decided I wanted to shoot. And I said only if I had a pink gun. That was the only way I would do it. And so when I was 7 or 8 years old, I started shooting sporting clays with my dad and my uncle. and some other family friends. And then when I was 12, I started competing. So I just grew up with it and had a lot of family involved in it.
Is there something that drew you to trap specifically as a focus here?
I really love all the disciplines, and I think that's the beauty of being on the team here, that I get to still shoot everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I love bunker just because I feel like it's so much fun. I feel like I'm not constantly striving for perfection. Like, there's always something I can work on. It's never good enough. And just how far I can go with it, that I can go to the Olympics in 2028, and I get to travel around the world to World Cups and everything. So it's really incredible.
What are some of the key skills that separate a good shooter from a really great shooter?
It depends per person, but I would say just a lot of drive and determination, because really anyone can get where they need to be, but it's just how much they're willing to put in, how much effort, and how much time at the range, and then also just love for the sport
mm-hmm.
rather than just love for winning. Because if you just love winning, it's really not going to be that enjoyable over time. Like, winning is great, and we all strive to do it, but if you don't love every step of the process, you're never going to really get there. So I think those are two things that definitely separate people.
Talking with Ava Downs, she's a junior here at Hillsdale College, a member on the Hillsdale shotgun team, and 2025 junior Olympic champion in international trap. The people watching, perhaps it looks relatively simple. What's tougher about what you do than what people might think?
Well, it looks like we get a very good read on the target every time, or that we're connected. Sometimes they're really hard to see, or you just have a weird move to it. Also, we don't know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so precise. So if you're just a little off, you can miss. So it looks so simple when we're doing it well, but when we're not doing it well, it's really complicated even for us.
What's your training look like to keep your focus, to keep your reflexes sharp, to stay consistent and compete at an elite level?
For me, I'm out at the range almost every day leading up to a match. So I'll take like 1 or 2 weeks off after a big match, such as after I got back from Greece, I took a week and a half off bunker. Now we have a selection match in a week, so I'm back at it every single day at the range, do meditation every single day, and cut out time for myself to make sure that I have enough time to focus.
Mm-hmm.
And visualization is a huge part of really all sports, or it should be, and it can help you so much. So even when you're not physically doing it, visualizing yourself doing it and running your mental game consistently, even when you're not out there, can be a huge help. So it's a lot of work on and off the range, and a really constant commitment, and just choosing to go there every day and work, even if it's really difficult that day.
Take us through the Junior Olympic Championship where you won in international trap. That moment you realized you won, what was the whole experience like?
Well, I started off the final not well. I shot a good match, but I started off not well, and I was kind of looking back at my coach, and I was like, what is going on? I don't know what to do. This is not going well. And I was just like, I can't smooth out. And he looked back at me and was just like, just trying to motion for me to smooth out and calm down. And then all of a sudden it clicked. And then it was like, okay, I'm behind. I have a lot of ground to make up. And then I had a really great, like, back three quarters of the final. And then by the last pass or so, I knew that I had won. So it was just really exciting, and I just wanted to finish out my final with a good score and just see how much I could recover. And it was just a really great confidence boost, and it was very exciting because the next few days I left for a couple different matches, including a World Cup in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nice to have a win going into that, to have my mind straight for when I got there.
What do you learn about yourself through the Junior Olympic competition, through the World Cup competition in Italy? What does competing against the high-level talent do for you?
It always pushes me to be better and shows that no matter what, it's never going to be like good enough unless you keep trying. It's taught me how to really take care of myself and prioritize myself. It's taught me that I'm more than just my wins and losses and everything than that, because competing at such a high level, it's very easy to forget that you're not just inherently tied to your sport.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taught me that, and it's given me a lot of really great friendships and relationships with the people I travel with for Team USA, but also the people I've met overseas. So I've learned a lot about that, and I've learned how to win and how to lose, and I think that has been huge, and especially with the work I've done on my mental management training through the years, it's really been cool to see that come to fruition and learn how to adapt and change and know what I need on any given day.
Abe is a junior here at Hillsdale College, in addition to being a championship shooter, and that's a challenge in and of itself, of course. How do you balance that, the college life and classes and coursework and also training and competing at the national level?
So it's not always easy, but over time I've done a lot of different mental management work and training, including with winning in mind and mental management systems with Brian and Lanny Basham. And that has been huge because when I was a freshman in high school, I decided that this was something I was going to lean towards pursuing. And Brian told me that anyone who's successful knows what they're doing any minute of every day. And that if somebody asks me what I'm doing at 2:30 p.m. two Thursdays from now, I better have a pretty good idea. So I've learned how to manage my time and learned how to actually integrate that into my life. So I know when I need to get stuff done. I have like a planner and like a calendar where I have all my due dates and just work through it. And sometimes it really sucks when I get back from a match and I have to take 5 exams in 1 week, but you just kind of got to tough it out and embrace the suck, and then it'll eventually get better.
How do you think your time here at Hillsdale has helped to shape you as an athlete?
It has really helped me. I've had so many opportunities through the team, but also I can grow as a person here at Hillsdale, and that has helped me to be a better competitor and better person, and I really appreciate that. And it's impacted really every aspect of my life, including my training and competitions.
And you mentioned 2028 a little bit earlier in the conversation. So what are your goals moving forward, both in competition and beyond?
So my goals moving forward are the Olympics in 2028 in LA. That is the main goal, and I have a lot of different things leading up to that. So that's really the big goal. But then after that, it would be 2032 and 2036 and continuing on. Yeah, and getting my degree from Hillsdale and being able to balance a professional life and an athletic life, because Hillsdale has also taught me that I don't want to just be an athlete all the time, that I also want to be able to channel myself into other things. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's very overwhelming and can be very easy to just tie your worth with your sport or not have another outlet for things. So I think being at Hillsdale and then also being in a sorority and being involved in other things has helped me with that. And I want to be able to continue that through my time at Hillsdale and post-grad from Hillsdale.
What would you say to young shooters out there, especially young women perhaps, who might be interested in getting into the sport but aren't sure where or how to start?
I would say to go find your local gun club, find your local shotgun range. You can typically rent guns and rent instructors and just go out and give it a shot. Try it. I know we have Liberty camps and stuff like that here at Hillsdale.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the area, it's really great to go to those and try it out. Or if you're at the college, to try and do, like, we have basic shotgun classes. So there's a lot of entry. I got started in the SCTP if you want to start competing. And to do that and just keep working at it, because if you put your mind to it, you can really accomplish something great, whether that be your end goal or all the steps along the way.
Ava Downs is a junior at Hillsdale College and also a member of the Hillsdale Shotgun Team, 2025 Junior Olympic Champion in International Trap. Ava, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Scott Jennings. His new book is A Revolution of Common Sense. Also current Hillsdale student Ava Downs. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hi, I'm Ted Bambino, president of the Reading Rodeo. We are thrilled to be partners with the Reading Rancheria. They are an integral part to the success of the Reading Rodeo.
Hi, I'm Julie. This is Debbie. We're here at the Shasta Family YMCA.
Hi, and I'm Kristen, the CEO. And on behalf of our team, I'd like to thank the Reading Rancheria for the many years of support for our programs and our projects like the playground.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Introducing Jackpot Blitz, the industry's most advanced digital poker table designed for players who crave the energy of live play. Seamlessly jump into live multi-table tournaments and make your moves with just a tap. No dealers, no delays, just pure poker. Hands are dealt instantly and side pots handled automatically. And the pace, whoa, blazing fast. This isn't just the future of poker, it's happening now. Play smarter, play faster, play Jackpot Blitz. For complete details, visit WinRiver.com and find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Reading Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Reading Bike Park. We just want to thank the Reading Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Reading Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Reading Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. You've been in an accident with your vehicle. You call your insurance. The first thing they do is tell you where to go to get an estimate and repairs. Well, tell them where to go and come see us at Coachmaster. They're sending you to their discount repair shop to get the cheapest repair possible. This is not in your best interest. You have the right to choose Coachmaster to do your repairs. All we need is your claim number, and we can handle the entire process. At Coachmaster, we don't repair your vehicle for the insurance company. We repair it for you. We use quality parts and products to ensure the highest errors. Your vehicle will be returned to a pre-loss condition. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family-owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Workers' compensation cases can move really slowly, and it's frustrating. Don't get pressured into hiring the first law firm you meet with just because they were fast to get you on their schedule. Your case impacts every aspect of your life. You want a local attorney that understands that and will get you the best outcome. Interview Patrick Orman of Gorman Law to see if he is the right attorney and to see if you really need an attorney. He will tell you the truth. Call 530-262-2168 or schedule online at GormanComp.com. Law. Consultations and workers' comp are always free.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Hello.
This is Carl Bott.
And Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Ready to grow your business? KCNR is the last locally owned and operated radio station in our area. We reach thousands of listeners in our community every single day. Our professional production team creates custom ads that grab attention and get the results for your business. And you'll be surprised on how affordable advertising with KCNR is. Our listeners are your customers. Call Sue McClain today at 530-605-4565.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Celebrate the holiday season at Redding Garden of Lights, open November 21st through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay in Redding, California. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights, plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, and more. New for 2025, upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express, adorned with festive lights and wintry displays. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
Join me, Dr. Lauren, on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavor. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1450.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
Hi, I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Redding. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Breaking news from Washington, I'm Bernie Bennett on Town Hall. Correspondent Julie Walker reports U.S. officials have laid out some of the details of the U.S. military strike against Venezuela that led to the capture of leader Nicolas Maduro.
Joint Chiefs Chairman General Dan Kane says for months U.S. forces practiced to capture Venezuelan President Maduro, and in the end more than 150 aircraft launched from across the Western Hemisphere, including F-18s, F-22s, and F-35 fighter jets, B-1 bombers, and drones.
We rehearse again and again, not to get it right, but to ensure that we cannot get it wrong.
No U.S. forces were killed, but one aircraft was hit but was able to fly out. I'm Julie Walker.
President Trump is putting the world on notice after the U.S. captured Maduro. White House correspondent Greg Cluxton reports.
Following the military operation, said the U.S. is going to control Venezuela during the transition and said other countries should learn a lesson.
This extremely successful operation should serve as warning to anyone who would threaten American sovereignty or endanger American lives.
Nicolas Maduro and his wife were taken from their home on a military base in the Venezuelan capital and are set to face criminal charges in the United States. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Revelers chanted liberty and draped Venezuelan flags over their shoulders in South Florida Saturday to celebrate the U.S. military operation to capture Nicolas Maduro and move him from the country. It's a stunning outcome that they had longed for. It also has left them wondering what comes next in their homeland. People gathered for a rally in Doral as word spread of Maduro's ouster. Doral is the Miami suburb where President Donald Trump has recently and roughly half of the population is of Venezuelan descent. He has a golf course there as well. This is townhall.com.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-555-2085. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-555-2085. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-555-2085. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-555-2085. 800-555-2085.
Correspondent Regina Garcia Cano reports from Caracas on the situation following the capture of Venezuela's leader.
I'm in Venezuela's capital, Caracas, where overnight multiple explosions rang out. I counted at least 7. The U.S. government has now described those explosions as a large-scale strike against Venezuela. In Caracas, the streets are unusually quiet for a Saturday. Very few cars and motorcycles can be seen going by. At least near the presidential palace, however, some Maduro supporters have gathered and have been chanting, bring Maduro back. Venezuela's Vice President, Delcy Rodriguez, has said Maduro's whereabouts remain unknown.
No hay sometimiento. No hay subordinación.
And she has demanded proof of life.
Iran's supreme leader has addressed ongoing protests there, insisting rioters must be put in their place. The protests, sparked by Iran's struggling economy, have been going on for a week. On Saturday, violence surrounding the demonstrations killed more people. More on these stories at townhall.com. The American Kennel Club added 3 more breeds to its recognized list. Julie Walker reports.
One of the newcomers is the Teddy Roosevelt Terrier. Another, the Russian Svetnaya Balanka, a lapdog developed in Soviet-era Russia. The third, a centuries-old French hunting hound called the Basset Fauve de Bretagne. The AKC now recognizes 205 breeds. Recognition means eligibility for many U.S. dog shows and can increase a breed's visibility to the pet-loving public. Julie Walker, New York.
In Battle, Wisconsin, Judge Hannah Dugan, who was convicted of obstruction last week for helping an immigrant invade federal officers, has sent her resignation letter to the governor. The letter was sent Saturday. Republicans have been making plans to impeach her ever since her December 19th conviction. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Bernie Bennett in Washington.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
For a lot of people in the media, he broke them, you know. Mm-hmm. He convinced them that they're no longer supposed to be journalists, but they're supposed to be activists, or they're supposed to be opposition to the president. I think you can cover him fairly, and you can ask hard questions. But what we've seen is something that's gone well beyond that.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Scott Jennings, senior political commentator at CNN, and also author of the new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. We'll talk in depth with Scott about that book on today's program. Also later on, Ava Downs is with us, current Hillsdale student and 2025 USA Shooting Trap Junior Olympic champion. First, we're joined by Scott Jennings. He's CNN senior political commentator, also radio host for the Salem Radio Network. You can find him on X at Scott Jennings KY. His brand new book is A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for the time today. Honored to be with you.
I don't know if you get this as much as maybe you did a year ago, but I still hear people say this, which is, where the heck did Scott Jennings come from? All of a sudden, election 2024, everyone's watching viral videos on X and elsewhere, and this guy Scott Jennings is making points we all wish we could make when leftists make their arguments. So tell people a bit about your background. Where did Scott Jennings come from?
Well, a long time ago, he came from Kentucky. I'm a Western Kentuckian, grew up in a little town called Dawson Springs, and also attended the University of Louisville. That's where I graduated from. And, you know, years ago, I thought I was going to be in journalism. I was a radio news anchor in Louisville while I was in college. But in 2000, I decided to join the Bush for President campaign, and that began my journey in politics. But, you know, I never really forgot about my love of the media, my love of broadcasting. And in 2017, I got a chance to join CNN. You know, for a few years, it was really a very much a part-time job for me. But the 2024 campaign, plus the advent of this 10 o'clock debating show, which we now have for the last couple of years, really gave me a chance to do what I can do. And so I really credit CNN, honestly. They decided they wanted to put a conservative on the air who was going to fight hard for how half the country sees the world. And I'm doing that every day and making arguments and debating the left and doing it often 4 and 5 on 1. And honestly, I think it's working.
People like you, I think, because you are measured and leveled and logical, even in the face of perhaps some hyperactive activity from the left on the panel. What is going through your mind as you await your turn, let your colleague finish before you rebut that argument? What are you thinking about?
Well, look, I think the TV debates are for conservatives. I think the way we win is by keeping our wits about us and also arguing in good faith and in good humor. I don't think we win by just simply yelling louder than the other people. I don't really care for crosstalk. I don't like it when the whole thing just gets tied up in a shouting match. I believe in conservative arguments. So I believe in letting these conversations unfold. And when you do that, then you get a chance to talk. And if you give me 60 seconds, there's a really good chance I'm going to explain why the left is wrong, why the conservatives have it right, and why our point of view right now seems to be ascendant in America. But I think a lot of people get into these debates, they get overly emotional, they can't control themselves, and they stop making factual or logical arguments, and they just start operating out of emotion or anecdote. And I just don't personally find that to be persuasive. And I think most people who watch debates and enjoy debates would rather hear someone argue from a position of fact and logic and reason as opposed to just constant emotional overreaction.
Scott Jennings, the new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. And Scott, as I read A Revolution of Common Sense, it occurred to me that this is a book as much about the president's cabinet as it is about the president himself. Scott Bessent, Marco Rubio, Doug Burgum, Christopher Wright, Elon Musk for a time as well in that inner circle. How do you explain that a guy who is painted as a dictator and an autocrat put so much trust in these advisors and cabinet members who are so sharp on the issues?
Well, that's a great question. And the one big observation that I was able to make, I think, after hanging around the White House and spending some time with the president and just talking to all these people, is just what a premium Trump put on picking the right team this time around. I think that's one of the biggest differences between this administration and his first. He's got the correct team that matched his leadership style. So you look at the people that he's chosen, Bessent, Rubio, Burgum, and the others that you mentioned. They best match how he wants to run the country. I think in the first term, he didn't quite have that. Not that those people were bad people. It's just when you have a leader, when you have a manager, the team has to match the style. And this time around, they got that right. I can tell you this. I don't know who was running the country, really, during the Biden years. I'm not sure any of us do. But I know who's running it right now. It's Donald Trump. And the way he's running it is out of the Oval Office, behind the Resolute Desk, and surrounded by a cabinet and a team of advisors who are not there to execute their will. They're there to execute the president's will based on the results of the last election. So I really do think he puts a lot of trust in these guys. And he'll tell you, you know, Rubio's been an all-star. Bessent's been an all-star. Mm-hmm. And all these people he has put in place, what are they doing? They're taking his priorities that he clearly laid out to the American people, and they're executing them in their own divisions. And I, you know, my personal view is that Bessent and Rubio have been the all-stars of the cabinet. And you hear that constantly from conservatives that you talk to around and around the country. They're just so impressed with these two guys. And you look at their portfolios, and, you know, a great chunk of the president's first year in office has fallen right in the lap of Rubio and Bessent, and they have executed flawlessly.
On Marco Rubio, the president has had some relationships with, say, older guard Republicans that have fizzled after a time. Rubio's a guy that sort of predates the president in terms of his political stature, but someone who seems to have grown in stature with the president and grown in trust with the president. Why is Rubio so strong inside the administration?
Well, he has been, I think, both a skillful operator inside the building over at the State Department, but also externally. I mean, you look at all the serious issues that have come up on the world stage in the last year. I mean, the president has spent a lot of time on foreign policy. Rubio's been in the middle of all of it. You look at the peace agreements they've negotiated. You look at dealing with the migration crisis going on in our hemisphere. I mean, across the board, usually on a weekly basis, Trump is doing something that involves the portfolio of the State Department. Look what's happening in the Middle East. I mean, Rubio's all over that as well. And so one of the reasons he's been able to grow in stature is just because the president has put so much on his plate, and the president himself has focused so much on these issues. It demanded a Secretary of State who could rise to the occasion. There's no doubt that Rubio has done that. And I think what conservatives love about Rubio is just how articulate he is at explaining, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, here's why it's going to work. He is one of the smoothest communicators in the cabinet. And as you know, with Trump, being able to communicate externally is a big part of what it means to work for him. And I just don't think anybody has communicated the America First worldview better than Marco Rubio. He has shown extreme skill set here, both in terms of internal management, but external communications. He's really the whole package right now and is doing a terrific job, in my opinion.
Scott Jennings with us, CNN senior political commentator. You hear him hosting on Salem Radio Network as well. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. You mentioned this first year or so has been a heavy foreign policy year for President Trump. Inside A Revolution of Common Sense, you make the point that it's actually surprising how not friendly the president has been to Russia since taking office. That, of course, goes against some conventional wisdom that says, oh, Trump's a Russian stooge. How has the president been perhaps an enemy to Russia during his time in the Oval Office.
Well, I think this is one of the most sinister narratives, and it's left over from the beginning of his first administration when every Democrat in the country convinced themselves that Russia had stolen the election, which, of course, we now know is completely, totally false and fabricated. But as a leftover of that era, they are now convinced that every foreign policy move the president makes is done so in service to Vladimir Putin. The record is exactly the opposite. Yes, it is absolutely true that he's trying to achieve a peace deal between Ukraine and Russia. I tell you one thing I learned about Donald Trump. The man is serious about peace. He hates war. He doesn't like war. He doesn't like the idea of people dying all over the world. And he believes if you have a strong American president, you could bring about peace in the world. And he has done that in several conflicts. But on the Russia piece, look what he's done with NATO, getting them to agree to go to 5% for their defense spending levels. That's never been done before. He has provided assistance and weapons to Ukraine. You know, he's had Zelensky in the Oval Office, and although they've had difficult conversations, there's really no question, where the president aligned with our allies in Europe, aligned with NATO, there's no question where he is on this. And he has time and again, I think, grown more and more frustrated with Vladimir Putin, who is rebuffing his efforts to try to get to a peace agreement. I think the president knows what the score here is. He's dealing with a Russian president who only understands toughness. He only understands strength. And I think that's what the president is doing when he's helping our allies understand the wisdom of investing more in their own national defense. He has strengthened NATO far beyond what any president's been able to do when everybody was predicting the opposite, that he was going to destroy NATO. I just think time and again, these attacks have been hurled at Trump on the Russia stuff, and he constantly proves that it's not true, yet this narrative persists. You sort of have this unholy alliance on this between Democrats and the media. They just sort of take it as an article of faith, and they can go out and make these flippant comments. Oh, the president, you know, he likes Vladimir Putin. You have no evidence of that whatsoever, but you do have evidence to the contrary. It's just sad to me that they won't talk about it that way.
That's Scott Jennings of CNN and the Salem Radio Network. We'll talk more with him about his new book in just a moment. But first, I want to invite you to help shape the future of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, which includes this show you're listening to right now. Visit podcast.hillsdale.edu, click on the survey pop-up, and you can take our very first listener survey. By doing so, you'll help the Hillsdale College Podcast Network reach millions of Americans with the timeless truths that make this country great. But we need your help. Visit podcast.hillsdale.edu, click on the survey pop-up to take the survey. Thanks for listening, and thanks in advance for your feedback. We continue with Scott Jennings from CNN and the Salem Radio Network. His brand new book is A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott Jennings, you mentioned the media. There's a chapter in which you coined the phrase political information distribution complex in the way that information flows from the legacy media, mainstream media, to the American public. Is that changing a bit? We see some changes at the Washington Post, both on the op-ed page and among the paper's reporters. We see changes at CBS, Barry Weiss and Free Press people coming in to the CBS network. Are executives realizing at last that something needs to change?
Well, I think maybe yes. I think we have a long way to go, though. I think the American media is in such a deep hole with the people. You look at the confidence in institutions measurements taken by Gallup. I mean, people don't have confidence in the institution of the media. People want there to be a trusted free press. I certainly do. I work in it. You know, I believe that we need a trusted free press. We just don't have that right now, but we could get it. And I think things are changing, but I think we have a long way to go. And I think Trump, unfortunately, for a lot of people in the media, he broke them. You know, He convinced them that they're no longer supposed to be journalists, but they're supposed to be activists, or they're supposed to be opposition to the president. I think you can cover him fairly and you can ask hard questions. But what we've seen is something that's gone well beyond that. And I think in our political coverage, the reason I point that phrase political information distribution complex is because on election night 2024, you know, I made this long speech after we finally declared Trump the winner on CNN about the death of the political information distribution complex and about how it had misled the American people about the state of the election, about what was happening in the last 3 weeks of the election, about the issues going on in the election. It had worked so hard to elect Kamala Harris, and it had convinced people that she was surging at the end, when in fact we know the opposite. was true. And so I think people have awakened to the idea that they're not always getting all the information from one source. And people right now are seeking out independent sources. They're looking at folks right now who are existing outside of the mainstream media space for information. That is the market screaming at you to make changes. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things you mentioned, I think, are good. There's a long way to go. I'm a huge Barry Weiss fan. I mean, she may save us all. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, but I think that's someone who understands what are we trying to do here? We're trying to give people the truth. We're trying to tell people the truth. We're trying to get people information, not narratives. And I just think that's what people are hungry for. They don't want narratives. They want to know the facts. They want to know the information. But often what they get are narratives, just like on the Russia conversation. They've mm-hmm. been fed a narrative about that. But I'm not sure they've been fed the truth about it. But they get plenty of narratives. But I think there's something amiss here, and they're hungry for truth instead of narrative.
Scott Jennings with us. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. The other big issue in President Trump's first year has been the southern border and immigration. And President Trump, back in that first term, first campaign, of course, made the promise that we'd get tired of winning. And it was kind of a joke, of course. But I wonder, Scott, if the president has been too successful on the southern border, because that was a disaster and he cleaned it up very quickly. All it took was a change in the Oval Office. But now that has disappeared from the news cycle. It is not as big of a deal as it was perhaps 6, 8, 12 months ago. Texas is redistricting, thinking that some of those Hispanic gains along the border will hold. And I just wonder, if has the president been too successful on the southern border?
Well, he has. There's no question. I think this has been the swiftest and most important accomplishment of his administration. I think the immigration issue is what propelled him in the first place when he first ran for office. It certainly propelled a big part of his campaign last year. And you're exactly right. All we needed was a new president. We haven't passed any new laws. That's what's amazing about this. We've mm-hmm. not passed a single immigration law. We're just enforcing the laws that exist. And that shows you the difference between this administration, which is simply enforcing the law, and the previous, which was instructing federal law enforcement not to enforce the law. They wanted a culture of open borders. And of course, you know all the societal ills that flow from that. Trump shows up, changes the attitude. The border is closed. I do think we're having a pretty significant national debate about internal enforcement, but I still think President Trump is right side up on it. I still think the American people believe, you know, we let 20 million people into this country. We can't just turn a blind eye to what that means for our society. It doesn't mean that they're all bad people or that they're all violent criminals, but it does mean they all broke our laws. And it does beg the question, how permissive are we going to be? And the more permissive you are on amnesty for things like that, the more you encourage people to come here. I think Trump knows that. So part of the internal enforcement argument is not just, well, we have to get people out because they broke our laws. It's that we cannot go back to sending a signal to the rest of the world. Just get here and it'll probably work out for you. Mm-hmm. That attitude is what got us in the mess in the first place. And so I totally agree with you that he's been successful. But honestly, I'm not sure the job is done. Mm-hmm. The internal enforcement piece goes on. Democrats are fighting hard against it. And honestly, if we ever got a new administration or people in charge that had a different attitude, you could see how quickly you could slip back into the old ways. Now I think it's also evolving into this fight with the narco-terrorists. They're sinking the boats out in our hemisphere now. Mm-hmm. They're amassing military power to do that. I think the signal goes beyond just simple immigration enforcement. The message is we're just not going to allow the United States to be taken advantage of by Central and South America anymore, whether that's via just simple immigration or whether that's via this narco-terrorist system that exists that puts all this poison into our country that kills hundreds of thousands of people a year.
Scott Jennings, there's a section in A Revolution of Common Sense on DEI, and you expound on this thought, this quote from Chris Caldwell, who says that this rolling back of DEI is the biggest policy change in decades. Why is the activity against DEI, the elimination of DEI, both governmental and then the influence on the private sector, perhaps an underreported, underappreciated part of President Trump's second term?
Well, one of the things that he has done is he has, you know, I think we had a wet blanket on us in the country. Everybody was sort of tiptoeing around, being forced to speak this language of DEI, being forced to say things out loud, candidly on other cultural issues, on the transgender ideology. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at how our culture had been overtaken by people who had just invented a new language and invented a bunch of nonsense and forcing everyone in government and in corporate America to live by these edicts. And of course, the Biden administration definitely, as a policy matter, installed this in the federal government. They pushed this. Nobody really liked it. Nobody really thinks it's a good idea to operate by the edicts of DEI or by the edicts of transgender ideology. And so Trump comes along and basically had the courage to say what everyone else is already thinking. He removes it from the federal government. It's no longer federal policy. What they want to do is find people who are best for the job. And that's the trait that they're looking for. Who's the best qualified person? By doing that, I think he gave cover and courage to everybody in corporate America to say, yeah, we don't have to do this either. Mm-hmm. And I think the vast majority of Americans agree with the president on this. It is a major division between the two parties. The Democrats are captured by this identity politics, ideologies that are all wrapped around identity. And what he wants and what he would say is that that's just not common sense. You know, what's common sense is who's the right person for the job? Who's got the best qualifications? Shouldn't that be what we're looking for first and foremost? That is a common sense way to approach the job that most Americans agree with. And by ripping it out of the federal government, he basically created a permission structure for everybody else in America to do the same thing. And I think there is relief, absolute relief across corporate America that Trump had the courage to finally turn us away from this ideology, which, by the way, it's bad for culture. It's bad for America. It's bad for people. And it's not a good way to run a government, certainly not a good way to run a company or any kind of an organization. Trump knew it. He ran on it. And he followed through on the promise, and I think people are appreciative of it.
Scott Jennings, in A Revolution of Common Sense, you make the point explicitly at least once, and I think it comes through in different ways, that Donald Trump, despite, again, media reports, is a very curious person and wants to know from people around him. You were inside a few of these meetings while researching and writing A Revolution of Common Sense. How does Donald Trump get his information? How does he want it presented to him? What questions does he want answered?
That is a great question, and it is a big observation and takeaway for me having written this book. Observing the president in a meeting, I think the caricature of him portrayed by the media is totally inaccurate. He is extremely curious. He asks a lot of questions. He likes to watch debates between advisors, people who have slightly different opinions about things. He does ask for everyone's opinion in the room. I watched him do it in the Oval Office. I watched him do it on Air Force One when I went to Michigan with him on his 100th day in office. He convenes people. He listens. And then he makes decisions. He's decisive. I think a difference between him and Biden, Biden was famously indecisive or uninvolved. Trump is involved. He's involved in the details. He's involved in how decisions are made. But once a decision is made, it's made. He's a decisive person. That is a trait that I think makes for a good presidency. So my observations are he absolutely likes to get information from people. He takes in a lot of information. He is as in tune with the daily news and cultural zeitgeist as anyone. And so when you think about, you know, what does the president know? Who is he talking to? He talks to a wide range of people, but they're not all yes men, and they're not all telling him what he wants to hear. There are a lot of people, I think, around him who are constantly debating about what the right thing to do is. But at the end of the day, they all know who the decision maker is. And the president also knows ultimately it's my responsibility to make a decision. You can't debate things endlessly. At some point, you have to decide what direction we're going. And I think he's been good at both. Putting together these internal conversations, but then being decisive when the time came to make a decision.
Scott, we talked earlier that this has been a foreign policy focused presidency for much of this first year of the second term. And President Trump has a very different view about United States power than Joe Biden did. What does President Trump understand about U.S. leadership on the world stage and showing and using, when necessary, U.S. power on the world stage?
Great question. Well, first of all, he understands what it means to have a strong American president who's willing to engage and what it means to have a weak and indecisive president. That's what we had before. So he believes that if the American president is strong, he believes that if the American president projects confidence and strength and decisiveness, then look, we are the world superpower. We are the indispensable country in the world. Our engagement with a president like that can force people to the table, can bring people around and get people to, you know, do things. Look what's happening in the Middle East. I don't think there's anybody except for Donald Trump who could have convened the Arab states, his special relationship with Netanyahu. I mean, the people that he had to get in the room, he gets in the room and he gets them to an outcome. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden couldn't figure that out. He's done that in little areas all over the world. The one area that eludes him is Russia, Ukraine. And he is working earnestly towards it. It's probably the most complicated situation that he is dealing with. But I know he's focused on it and trying to get to an outcome every single day. But in most cases, I think his view is that if the American president projects strength, if we say we're not going to put up with nonsense here, we're not going to put up with bad actors, we're not going to put up with people, you know, agreeing to something and then violating it the next day. He says, we're not going to put up with narco-terrorists in our own hemisphere. You need to help us with that. Look at what's going on with Mexico. We've had a massive drop in fentanyl coming across the border. Yes, the border is closed because of Trump. Some of that, though, remember at the beginning of the administration, he slapped the tariffs on Mexico and said, this is how serious I am about needing you to work with me on getting fentanyl down. I don't want it coming across the border anymore. That has been a major success. They're not covering it, but it's been a major success. Mm-hmm. None of this happens if these other countries don't take the president seriously. And you have to take Trump seriously. He has shown, if you don't take me seriously, I will take action. And people respect that. And so it goes into this idea of, is the president strong or is he weak? Is the president decisive or is he constantly wringing his hands? Is he constantly indecisive? Right now we have a strong, decisive president, and it's yielding results.
Final question for Scott Jennings. His new book, A Revolution of Common Sense, is available now. A quote from the book: Trump has expanded the definition of Republicans so it includes people who never have thought of themselves as Republicans until Trump invited them in. First of all, I think a great point that the invitation is such an important part of this process. You have to go ask for the vote. But this has led to a coalition, a wide coalition. It's led to people like RFK and Lori Chavez de Remer in the cabinet and people who perhaps are not historically Republican type selections. So the big question, how do you hold this coalition together when Trump is not going to appear on the ballot anymore? And how do you convince Republican voters to go out and vote when Donald Trump is not on the ballot?
Well, that's the number one strategic conversation that the Republican Party is wrestling with right now. What does our coalition look like in a post-Trump environment? The thing is, though, presidents, the best presidents, the people who run the best presidential campaigns, they are by nature coalition builders. George W. Bush did this. You know, he brought people in 2000 and 2004. Barack Obama did this. The ones that know how to get votes go out and find ways to get votes. Trump inherently understood this. Mm-hmm. He now sits at the top of a political party that has everybody from RFK to Mitch McConnell in it. I mean, that's a wide berth. But that's how you win. You don't win by getting smaller. You win by making your party attractive to people who might not have otherwise considered it. The other thing he's done is he's brought people into the party who had no demonstrable history of voting or very little history of voting. They didn't think of themselves as political at all. When I was with him in Michigan on his 100th day in office, I'll paraphrase, but he said, you know, in his speech, you know, whether you're conservative or whether you're liberal, whether you're left or whether you're right, whatever it is, it's just common sense. And his point is, I'm going to try to make common sense decisions. I'm not going to try to say I only am interested in people of a certain ideology. I'm just interested in making the best decision for the American people and what makes the most common sense. That branding has been so attractive to people who never, ever would have imagined they would be voting for a Republican. Mm-hmm. But yet, here they are. Look at the MAHA people, the Make America Healthy Again people. There's a ton of MAHA left out there, people who would think of themselves as being from the left. But Donald Trump made a space for them because he was said, well, some of what you're saying actually is there's common sense in that. I'm willing to adopt that, even though you're not necessarily of my political persuasion all of the time. That's pretty genius. How does the party replicate this in the future? Well, my takeaway is you can't replicate Donald Trump. He is singular. He is unique. The next group, whether it's J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio as a team, which seems like that's the direction we're headed right now, they're not going to be able to replicate his attitude. But what you can replicate is the idea that, hey, we have to be coalition builders. We have to find ways to make the party bigger, not smaller. I think sometimes, honestly, in politics, you're fighting with people who want to get rid of folks. Uh-huh. I want to excommunicate you from this. I want to get rid of you. Trump says, well, wait a minute. I actually want to bring people in. I need to add here to get enough votes to win. He did it twice. I think people would do well to look at his example. He didn't win by getting smaller. He won by making the party bigger. That's really the lesson for the future.
Scott Jennings, you see him on CNN as senior political commentator. You hear him on the Salem Radio Network weekdays. You can find him on X at Scott Jennings KY. The new book is fantastic. It's A Revolution of Common Sense, How Donald Trump Stormed Washington and Fought for Western Civilization. Scott Jennings, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me. It was an honor to write the book, and I appreciate the attention today. Thank you, sir.
Up next, Ava Downs is with us, current Hillsdale student and 2025 USA Shooting Trap Junior Olympic champion. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Classical music is one of the greatest achievements of Western civilization. It took 2,000 years and the work of the greatest philosophical, scientific, political, and religious minds to properly tune the piano and make great music possible. But classical music can be intimidating. In Hillsdale College's new, free, online course, The History of Classical Music, Chopin through Gershwin, you'll learn how to appreciate humanity's greatest musical accomplishments. In the history of classical music, concert pianist and Hillsdale College Distinguished Fellow Hyperion Knight explains how music has developed and what distinguishes the greatest musical achievements of Western civilization. To enroll today and secure your spot in this completely free online course, visit hillsdale.edu/network. That's hillsdale.edu/network.
Great books, great people, great ideas. Learning about these things is critical to being a well-educated human being, and we can help with the Hillsdale Dialogues. Each week, Hillsdale College President Larry Arne joins radio veteran Hugh Hewitt to discuss topics of enduring relevance. And from time to time, they also talk about current events, but always with an eye toward more fundamental truths. And they want you to tune in to a conversation like no other. The Hillsdale Dialogues are posted every Monday on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu. Or listen via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you find your audio.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We invite you to take a moment and subscribe to this show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We're joined by Ava Downs. She's a junior here at Hillsdale College, a member of the Hillsdale College Shotgun Team, and also 2025 Junior Olympic Champion in International Trap. Ava, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
For listeners who might not be familiar, tell us what exactly is trap shooting and how does a typical competition work? How does it play out?
So there's two different kinds of trap. There's American trap and international trap. I specialize in international trap with USA Shooting and the Hillsdale College Shotgun Team, but we all shoot everything. We shoot the American disciplines as a team. And how an international trap match, such as JO Nationals, works is they're typically 125 targets, and we shoot three rounds the first day, two rounds the second day. And what international trap actually is there's a physical bunker 10 meters in front of you in the ground with 15 machines in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's five stations. Each station has three machines allocated to it, a left, a right, and a straightaway. And the thing is, each of them are all very different. So they can be anywhere from 1 to 3 meters high at a certain distance out. So they can be high or low and anywhere from 45 degrees left to 45 degrees right. So they can really go anywhere and you don't know what's coming out, and they go 72 miles an hour. So that's down.
We'll talk a bit more about the Junior Olympic Championship in just a bit, but how did you first get into shooting sports? Was it something you grew up around, or did you find it later on?
So I grew up around it. We've always been a very gun-heavy family. We go up north and shoot. And when I was 7 years old, my dad went out with my uncle and shot sporting clays, and I wanted to go along the next few weeks. So I went along and pushed the buttons, and then I decided I wanted to shoot. And I said only if I had a pink gun. That was the only way I would do it. And so when I was 7 or 8 years old, I started shooting sporting clays with my dad and my uncle and some other family friends. And then when I was 12, I started competing. So I just grew up with it and had a lot of family involved in it.
Is there something that drew you to trap specifically as a focus here?
I really love all the disciplines, and I think that's the beauty of being on the team here, that I get to still shoot everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I love bunker just because I feel like it's so much fun. I feel like I'm not constantly striving for perfection. Like, there's always something I can work on. It's never good enough. And just how far I can go with it, that I can go to the Olympics in 2028, and I get to travel around the world to World Cups and everything. So it's really incredible.
What are some of the key skills that separate a good shooter from a really great shooter?
It depends per person, but I would say just a lot of drive and determination, because really anyone can get where they need to be, but it's just how much they're willing to put in, how much effort, and how much time at the range, and then also just love for the sport,
mm-hmm.
rather than just love for winning. Because if you just love winning, it's really not going to be that enjoyable over time. Like, winning is great, and we all strive to do it, but if you don't love every step of the process, you're never going to really get there. So I think those are two things that definitely separate people.
Talking with Ava Downs, she's a junior here at Hillsdale College, a member on the Hillsdale shotgun team, and 2025 junior Olympic champion in international trap. To people watching, perhaps it looks relatively simple. What's tougher about what you do than what people might think?
Well, it looks like we get a very good read on the target every time, or that we're connected. Sometimes they're really hard to see, or you just have a weird move to it. Also, we don't know where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so precise. So if you're just a little off, you can miss. So it looks so simple when we're doing it well, but when we're not doing it well, it's really complicated even for us.
What's your training look like to keep your focus, to keep your reflexes sharp, to stay consistent and compete at an elite level?
For me, I'm out at the range almost every day leading up to a match. So I'll take like 1 or 2 weeks off after a big match, such as after I got back from Greece, I took a week and a half off bunker. Now we have a selection match in a week, so I'm back at it every single day at the range, do meditation every single day, and cut out time for myself to make sure that I have enough time to focus.
Mm-hmm.
And visualization is a huge part of really all sports, or it should be, and it can help you so much. So even when you're not physically doing it, visualizing yourself doing it and running your mental game consistently, even when you're not out there, can be a huge help. So it's a lot of work on and off the range, and a really constant commitment, and just choosing to go there every day and work, even if it's really difficult that day.
Take us through the Junior Olympic Championship where you won in international trap. That moment you realized you won, what was the whole experience like?
Well, I started off the final not well. I shot a good match, but I started off not well, and I was kind of looking back at my coach, and I was like, what is going on? I don't know what to do. This is not going well. And I was just like, I can't smooth out. And he looked back at me and was just like, just trying to motion for me to smooth out and calm down. And then all of a sudden it clicked. And then it was like, okay, I'm behind. I have a lot of ground to make up. And then I had a really great, like, back three quarters of the final. And then by the last pass or so, I knew that I had won. So it was just really exciting, and I just wanted to finish out my final with a good score and just see how much I could recover. And it was just a really great confidence boost, and it was very exciting because the next few days I left for a couple different matches, including a World Cup in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really nice to have a win going into that, to have my mind straight for when I got there.
What do you learn about yourself through the Junior Olympic competition, through the World Cup competition in Italy? what is competing against the high level talent do for you?
It always pushes me to be better and shows that no matter what, it's never going to be like good enough unless you keep trying. It's taught me how to really take care of myself and prioritize myself. It's taught me that I'm more than just my wins and losses and everything than that, because competing at such a high level, it's very easy to forget that you're not just inherently tied to your sport.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taught me that, and it's given me a lot of really great friendships and relationships with the people I travel with for Team USA, but also the people I've met overseas. So I've learned a lot about that, and I've learned how to win and how to lose, and I think that has been huge, and especially with the work I've done on my mental management training through the years, it's really been cool to see that come to fruition and learn how to adapt and change and know what I need on any given day.
Ava's a junior here at Hillsdale College, in addition to being a championship shooter, and that's a challenge in and of itself, of course. How do you balance that, the college life and classes and coursework and also training and competing at the national level?
So it's not always easy, but over time I've done a lot of different mental management work and training, including with winning in mind and mental management systems with Brian and Lanny Basham. And that has been huge, because when I was a freshman in high school, I decided that this was something I was going to lean towards pursuing. And Brian told me that anyone who's successful knows what they're doing any minute of every day, and that if somebody asks me what I'm doing at 2:30 p.m. two Thursdays from now, I better have a pretty good idea. So I've learned how to manage my time and learned how to actually integrate that into my life. So I know when I need to get stuff done. I have like a planner and like a calendar where I have all my due dates and just work through it. And sometimes it really sucks when I get back from a match and I have to take 5 exams in 1 week, but you just kind of got to tough it out and embrace the suck, and then it'll eventually get better.
How do you think your time here at Hillsdale has helped to shape you as an athlete?
It has really helped me. I've had so many opportunities through the team, but also I can grow as a person here at Hillsdale, and that has helped me to be a better competitor and better person, and I really appreciate that. And it's impacted really every aspect of my life, including my training and competitions.
And you mentioned 2028 a little bit earlier in the conversation. So what are your goals moving forward, both in competition and beyond?
So my goals moving forward are the Olympics in 2028 in LA. That is the main goal, and I have a lot of different things leading up to that. So that's really the big goal. But then after that, it would be 2032 and 2036 and continuing on. Yeah, and getting my degree from Hillsdale and being able to balance a professional life and an athletic life, because Hillsdale has also taught me that I don't want to just be an athlete all the time, that I also want to be able to channel myself into other things. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's very overwhelming and can be very easy to just tie your worth with your sport or not have another outlet for things. So I think being at Hillsdale and then also being in a sorority and being involved in other things has helped me with that. And I want to be able to continue that through my time at Hillsdale and post-grad from Hillsdale.
What would you say to young shooters out there, especially young women perhaps, who might be interested in getting into the sport but aren't sure where or how to start?
I would say to go find your local gun club, find your local shotgun range. You can typically rent guns and rent instructors and just go out and give it a shot. Try it. I know we have Liberty camps and stuff like that here at Hillsdale.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the area, it's really great to go to those and try it out. Or if you're at the college, to try and do, like, we have basic shotgun classes. So there's a lot of entry. I got started in the SCTP if you want to start competing, and to do that and just keep working at it, because if you put your mind to it, you can really accomplish something great, whether that be your end goal or all the steps along the way.
Ava Downs is a junior at Hillsdale College and also a member of the Hillsdale Shotgun Team, 2025 Junior Olympic Champion in International Trap. Ava, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Scott Jennings. His new book is A Revolution of Common Sense. Also current Hillsdale student Ava Downs. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hi, I'm Ted Bambino, president of the Redding Rodeo. We are thrilled to be partners with the Redding Rancheria. They are an integral part of the success of the Redding Rodeo.
Hi, I'm Julie. This is Debbie. We're here at the Shasta Family YMCA.
Hi, and I'm Kristen, the CEO. And on behalf of our team, I'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for the many years of support for our programs and our projects like the playground.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Introducing Jackpot Blitz, the industry's most advanced digital poker tape designed for players who crave the energy of live play. Seamlessly jump into live multi-table tournaments. Make your moves with just a tap. No dealers, no delays, just pure poker. Hands are dealt instantly and side pots handled automatically. And the pace, whoa, blazing fast. This isn't just the future of poker, it's happening now. Play smarter, play faster, play Jackpot Blitz. For complete details, visit WinRiver.com. And find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
I'm Nathan with the Redding Trail Alliance, and we're here at the Redding Bike Park. We just want to thank the Redding Rancheria for all the help they've given us over the years supporting the many projects we're doing for our community.
Hi, I'm Dan, and this is Donna, and we're with Wings of Angels.
And we'd like to thank the Redding Rancheria for their continued support over the years to our foundation.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. You've been in an accident with your vehicle. You call your insurance. The first thing they do is tell you where to go to get an estimate and repairs. Well, tell them where to go and come see us at Coachmaster. They're sending you to their discount repair shop to get the cheapest repair possible. This is not in your best interest. You have the right to choose Coachmaster to do your repairs. All we need is your claim number and we can handle the entire process. At Coachmaster, we don't repair your vehicle for the insurance company. We repair it for you. We use quality parts and products to ensure the highest quality repairs. Your vehicle will be returned to a pre-loss condition. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. Remember Coachmaster on East Side Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Redding and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence. You can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Workers' compensation cases can move really slowly, and it's frustrating. Don't get pressured into hiring the first law firm you meet with just because they were fast to get you on their schedule. Your case impacts every aspect of your life. You want a local attorney that understands that and will get you the best outcome. Interview Patrick Orman of Gorman Law to see if he is the right attorney and to see if you really need an attorney. He will tell you the truth. Call 530-262-2168 or schedule online at GormanComp. Law. Consultations and workers' comp are always free.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality?
At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit SimpsonU.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy.
We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right, even cooking sometimes.
Cooking sometimes, people, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up, fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Ready to grow your business? KCNR is the last locally owned and operated radio station in our area. We reach thousands of listeners in our community every single day. Our professional production team creates custom ads that grab attention and get the results for your business. And you'll be surprised on how affordable advertising with KCNR is. Our listeners are your customers. Call Sue McClain today at 530-605-4565.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel is a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Financial Advisor Susan Eastman at 530-244-7199. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Again, that number, 530-244-7199.
Celebrate the holiday season at Redding Garden of Lights, open November 21st through January 4th at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay in Redding, California. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with over 2 million lights, plus holiday-themed music, food and drinks, glowing swings, and more. New for 2025, upgrade your experience with a train ride on the new Turtle Express, adorned with festive lights and wintry displays. Redding Garden of Lights is presented by Dignity Health Mercy Medical Center Redding. Buy tickets online at turtlebay.org.
Join me, Dr. Lauren, on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavor. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1460.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
I'm Steve Coburn, proud owner of Country Air Pet Resort here in Reading. I invite you to come and take a tour of my revitalized pet resort. Our goal here at Country Air is to make sure your pet can relax and have a healthy, happy time away from home. With friendly, caring people, lots of fresh air and exercise, good healthy food, and plenty of pampering. There are no small cages here. What we offer are large temperature-controlled runs and spacious exercise yards that are great for fun and socialization. We even offer daycare. Cats are treated to a two-room apartment plus playtime in our playroom. So stop by and take a tour of the best. You and your pet will want to come back to Country Air Pet Resort, where our motto is, we treat your pets as if they were our own. Country Air Pet Resort, 549-3335.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.
Vaping,